Hey everyone, welcome to our weekly Course in Miracles study group. I'm so glad you're here. Let's begin by just dropping in together. And turning your attention within to your willingness to loose the world from all we thought it was. To be willing to question everything, even our own beliefs, our own perceptions, and to step into a place of willingness to be taught by our inner teacher who knows and is only love and only loving. May we gently learn who it is that we really are. In your mind, offering willingness to the Holy Spirit. And this holy instant we give to you. Be you in charge, for we would follow you, certain that your direction gives us peace. If we need a word, a thought, or a tranquil, open mind, these are the gifts that hold charge tonight by our request. So taking a nice mindful breath in and out. And coming together to our perception of right here, right now. We're likely going to finish up chapter 29. We have a good number of paragraphs to read, but I think we can do it. Before I give the page references, I have one announcement. On Friday, I'm going to be going live on TGF-TV. It's the Teachers of God Foundation Friday weekly show that right now is free. And I'll be Susan Telford's guest. And we will be talking about spiritual evolution, which is so fun and such an awesome topic. And if you're able to make it, I will be sending out a link later this week. So please do take a look for that. There will be a replay. And I think it's 10:30 on Friday. So I'll send that out some point this week. All right. In the CE, we are on page 870, paragraph number 4. In the Foundation for Inner Peace edition, we are in Chapter 29, Part 9, Paragraph number 4. In the Sparkle edition, we are on page 680, and it's the first full paragraph on the page. And then in the original edition by Course in Miracles Society, it's Chapter 29, Part 10, Paragraph number 64. So we've been reading about the dream of judgment, and I'll just highlight just two quick things from our reading last week. This section opened with a rather eye-opening, startling sentence that says, "The slave of idols is a willing slave," meaning that we've chosen to believe in separation. And how do we awaken from this? How do we awaken from a dream that's a dream of judgment? We simply judge not, and we will awaken. It's as simple as that. And yet, of course, the ego is going to seem incessant with its judgments. And we have to remember, it's not that we're going to stop having judgmental thoughts. It's that we have none that we would keep. We hand it all over to Holy Spirit. Okay, so here we go. There can be no salvation in the dream as you are dreaming it. For idols must be part of it, to save you from what you believe you have accomplished and have done to make you sinful and put out the light within you. Little child, the light is there. You do but dream, and idols are the toys you dream you play with. Who has need of toys but children? They pretend they rule the world and give their toys the power to move about and talk and think and feel and speak for them. Yet everything their toys appear to do is in the minds of those who play with them. but they are eager to forget that they made up the dream in which their toys are real, nor recognize their wishes as their own. I want to read that last sentence one more time, but they are eager to forget that they made up the dream in which their toys are real, nor recognize their wishes as their own. I didn't think of this earlier, but just now as we were reading this, I love listening. My husband and I have a few favorite shows on NPR, and I can't think of the name of this one show in particular, but they had this really intriguing story one day, and it's very well done, and you feel like you're, you know, listening to, like, a storytelling hour. And it was this whole elaborate story about these sisters and how they would only communicate through, I'm trying to remember what it was. It sounded like, maybe it was like some kind of animal. They would only communicate through this animal, and they would pretend that the animal could talk to them. And they would only, like the sisters, there were points in their lives, I think years, where they would only talk to each other through this animal. Like, well, okay, so let's say the dog's name is Sam. Well, Sam thinks you should do this, this, and that. And that's like, they would basically like talk to each other, but as if it were the wishes of the dog. And the parents got really distressed, the father got really distressed by this at one point, because he's like our girls aren't communicating. Like they have this like alternate reality where they're getting lost in this world of, you know, their animal, their dog. Turned out at the very end, you find out that this is a puppet. So it wasn't a real animal, but the one sister had this puppet that had a life of its own, and that's how they would communicate, was only through using this puppet. And so the whole story was just so fascinating. I'm like, oh my gosh, it was a puppet. My husband picked up on that right away, and I was slow. It took me till the end of the show till they said it was a puppet for me to realize that it was a puppet. But that came to mind as we were reading this, because I mean, Jesus right now just said, little child, the light is there. He's speaking to us as if we are little children, and we are little children in, you know, in his eyes. We think we've put the light out within us, and we have not. It is still there. And what we're playing with here in this world of form are toys. These are all puppets and stuffed animals that we are giving our belief and our imagination into, and they're seeming terrifyingly real because we feel guilty that we're spending all this time playing with puppets and not just, you know, in our true reality, which is where we are and where we belong. So that just came to mind. Let's keep going, and then I'll pause for questions. I might take it two paragraphs at a time tonight so we get through this. Nightmares are childish dreams. The toys have turned against the child who thought he made them real. Yet can a dream attack? Or can a toy grow large and dangerous and fierce and wild? This does the child believe because he fears his thoughts and gives them to his toys instead. And their reality becomes his own because they seem to save him from his thoughts. Yet do they keep his thoughts alive and real, but seen outside himself, where they can turn against him for his treachery to them? He thinks he needs them that he may escape his thoughts, because he thinks the thoughts are real. And so he makes of anything a toy to make his world remain outside himself and play that he is but a part of it. So we've had thoughts as children. I'm going back to the sentence. I think it was sentence number 5. This does the child believe because he fears his thoughts and gives them to his toys instead. We've had thoughts that are not our real thoughts: guilt, separation, specialness, fear. And there's that deep part of us that feels like we've done something wrong for having these thoughts. And so we project them out to the toys, out into the world instead, and then it seems that those toys take on a life of their own and are then out to attack us, then out to get us. But what, where this is all really coming from is coming from our own minds. There's a footnote. I'm not going to read the whole thing, but it says, to understand why the toys turn against us, we need to realize that we have given them our judgments against the unpleasant things in them. It goes on to say, yet as this line says, the thoughts of judgment we give our toys are the thoughts that we fear, for they bring guilt. They are thus thoughts that betray us, thoughts that attack us with the guilt and pain of self-betrayal. It's important to remember, it's really important to remember that, and I'm actually thinking of today's lesson. If you started the lessons on the first, today's lesson is that my attack thoughts are attacking my invulnerability. And so that, speaking from my own experience and from talking to others who are anxiety prone, we start to fear our own thoughts. Like, oh my gosh, I'm afraid of my own attack thoughts. If my own attack thoughts are doing all of this, I'm terrified of them. That's where we have to bring our minds into remembering a teaching that we'll learn, that will come not so early in the workbook, but like later on, and that I feel like we've covered somewhere recently, that the miscreations of the mind don't really exist. We haven't really separated. We haven't actually had those thoughts. We're still at home. Those thoughts have only seemingly happened in a dream. I've been talking. I'm going to pause, and I'm wondering if anything is coming up for anyone.
Corinne, I head out.
Oh, yeah.
This is Sue.
Go on, Sue.
Did you hear someone before me?
No, I just heard a cough, so I didn't know if that was you.
Oh, that was me. That was me. And you might hear my puppy kind of crying for some attention. But I think I said something the last time I was on the call after my mother's funeral. Mm-hmm. And I was driving home, and I was, you know, had this wonderful experience, and then my sister and I had something of a conflict. I went in to the emotion of whatever that is, judgment. You know,
mm-hmm.
that you know, it was a judgment that what she had done was wrong. She shouldn't
mm-hmm.
have done that. She had made a promise to me, and she didn't keep it. The thoughts that I heard, it was such an interesting phenomenon. The thoughts that I heard, it was like I was witnessing these thoughts, that I was actually hearing these thoughts. It didn't feel like in other times, like
mm-hmm.
I was thinking them, like, oh boy, my sister, or you know that. It was, I could hear these voices saying these things, and I was witnessing them. And I thought, now how does this work? Is there like, could there be like strata of emotions in the mind? You
mm-hmm.
know, the really low ones are destructive and hateful.
Mm-hmm.
And when you get down in that emotion, there's like the group consciousness or the mass consciousness. These are all thoughts that
mm-hmm.
spur thoughts. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
But he says those are not your thoughts.
That's not your real thoughts.
That's the first time I had ever experienced it. I thought, I am not thinking these thoughts. Yes,
mm-hmm.
I allowed myself to go into a judgment,
mm-hmm.
and therefore these judgment thoughts came up.
Mm-hmm.
So it's the first time that I kind of experienced that, and I wondered if that's possibly how it works. And we've ever heard of Dr. David Hawkins, who did
uh-huh.
the calibrations of consciousness. He
mm-hmm.
says you have to get to a, like if you're, he says if you're below a 250, you're in hell, because all
mm-hmm.
of your thoughts are hellish. So if you have to get up to the consciousness of maybe acceptance before
mm-hmm.
your thoughts will allow you to escape, or your consciousness will allow you to escape those thoughts. It's almost like different layers. You know what I mean?
I do. That's cool. And that's really cool that you have that experience, because I think being in that place of, number one, being able to own and acknowledge that, hey, I went into judgment, and yet still to just be able to witness those thoughts, that witnessing is beautiful, because those are not your real thoughts. Those are the thoughts of the ego mind, and they're not your real thoughts. Our real thoughts are in our mind. As the lesson says, my real thoughts, or it's maybe a quote from a lesson, like within a lesson, my real thoughts are in my mind. I would like to find them. And I've always gotten a sense of that being like those, that deepest layer that you just described of like where like the hatred and like the really low energy thoughts are. Mm-hmm. It's interesting. You know, I've not studied David Hawkins much, but just like you said, what I know, he calibrated the energy frequencies of, you know, different emotions. And, but they're all like, one of the ways I've conceptualized it is that that deep fear layer is still hiding the light of, it's still hiding, like it's there to make the light that's beneath it seem utterly gone. You know, like
mm-hmm.
those
oh yeah,
ugly
no light.
Uh-uh. Yeah, it, mm-hmm. it makes it seem like there's a dark, dark veil that is impenetrable, and yet it's just fog. The Course uses that language, and if we imagine Jesus holding our hand as we pass through them, he says that will be no idle fantasy. So whether we need to increase our vibration up to love or drop, you know, even beneath like that level, I don't know exactly how that works, but the way that you described it makes perfect sense to me. I think it's just a matter of, you know, how we're conceptualizing this. But that's really cool. Thank you for that, Sue. It's always so helpful to have specific examples. Oh, awesome. Okay, let's read some more. Paragraph number 6. There is a time when childhood should be past and gone forever. Seek not to retain the toys of children. Put them all away, for you have need of them no more. The dream of judgment is a children's game, in which the child becomes the father, powerful, but with the little wisdom of the child. What hurts him is destroyed, what helps him, blessed. Except he judges this as does a child, who does not know what hurts and what will heal. And bad things seem to happen, and he is afraid of all the chaos in a world he thinks is governed by the laws he made. And here's the good news. Yet is the real world unaffected by the world he thinks is real, nor have its laws been changed because he did not understand. We'll read on in just a moment. So I'm wondering if anybody can relate to sentence number 4. The dream of judgment is a children's game in which the child becomes the father, powerful, but with the little wisdom of a child. You know, Sue, since you just shared a personal example, I'm going to go ahead and share a personal example. I mentioned already that I'm doing the lessons over again, and I've been really engaged with them, feeling just a lot of joy, you know, not knowing what anything is for, and these thoughts don't mean anything, and a meaningless world, you know, engenders fear, and God did not create a meaningless world. I've been feeling just so in tune. And then today I woke up, just stupidest little things. I was finding I was just getting frustrated really quickly. And sure enough, I open up to lesson 26. I don't know if you've had this happen before. If you haven't, you will, where you're going through something and the lesson or your reading addresses exactly what's going on and what you need to hear. And what we get caught in doing is saying, oh, they annoyed me. I'm feeling like I'm feeling because of them. But no, we first made a choice to attack. We first made a choice to be fearful. We first made a choice to judge, to identify as a body. There's a thousand ways we could say this. And it's from that place that then we interpret our experience. So when we have those, you know, situations showing up and we seem to be getting triggered, that's where we need to stop and recognize that we're never upset for the reason that we think. And luckily, with, you know, my experience with the course at this point, I was easily able to recognize that none of these little things mattered. What was coming up today, which was quite surprising to me, was, and I'm relating it to what we just read, I had like a little child temper tantrum, a little ego temper tantrum, that this isn't real and damn it, I want it to be. Like, I got in touch with that. I felt that and I was able to just totally access it completely clearly and to say, Holy Spirit, you know, take this. I'm willing to look at this with you. So that's kind of what I mean when I've shared in other instances that we can let what's unconscious become conscious. And whenever that happens, sometimes we can try to dig a little bit and like look and see what our hidden beliefs are. But other times things just might come up. And I feel like the lessons are a beautiful pathway into bringing that stuff up so we can look at it. I felt like a children's game in which I wanted to be the father, powerful, but with a little wisdom of a child. Like, I literally felt there was part of me, the ego part of me, having a little hissy fit. So I'm glad it came up. And I'm glad that I can share this with all of you. And it's just another layer coming up to be healed. And I will tell you, my peace completely came back after recognizing all of that. So yay for that. I hope that that's relatable.
Oh, it definitely is.
Yeah.
It's funny because, excuse me, as you started reading and this, you know, the whole child theme was coming up. And then when you shared that too, I remembered like I've been conceptualizing like my ego whatever's as tantrums lately for some reason.
Uh-huh.
I don't even know why. And I think I shared it on Facebook and stuff, but it's, you know, I think in a way it also helps me kind of be able to laugh at it.
Yeah.
And after, not, you know, like not when you're in it, because usually you're really feeling it, but afterwards, when you're looking at it with spirit and stuff, you can just be like, oh my God, it was like a little child having a tantrum, like mm-hmm. the ego. It's just, it can be really funny.
Mm-hmm. It can. And I'm so glad that you brought that piece up because, you know, having that lightheartedness, when a child is tantruming, I mean, you know, maybe you can be feeling all sorts of feelings, but it's still a child that's just having a temper tantrum, and it will it will pass. And if we can see ourselves in that light, it brings that lightness and that humor back into it. And I literally was like picturing this like part of me inside, like this ego part, just being like, you know, stomping my fists and like it is pretty funny. Thank you for that, Paul. Anybody else want to share before we read another paragraph?
Joyce.
Hi, Joyce.
Hi. You know, as you were sharing and as everybody was sharing and I was just listening, and something happened to me today. It was like I was throwing a tantrum. What did you call it?
A tantrum.
What happened was, and I'm not going to go into a lot of details because I don't want to take up any more time, but something happened in a meeting over the phone, and I recognized it instantly, and I wrote on paper a question that I wanted to ask the lady, and I wrote it down, and the Holy Spirit, when I got ready to answer the phone, what I wanted to say was, do you know this? But what I said was, I really enjoyed you, and I wanted to let people know that blah, blah, blah is the co-founder of this meeting. It was so amazing because what I wanted to say was really rude, but what actually came out of my mouth, because I've been asking the Holy Spirit, I've been asking God to really help me to control my speech muscles. And I got a phone call after the meeting, and the girl said, "Oh, you just did so wonderful." And I said, "Well, thank you." I said, "That's not what I wanted to say." So I understand perfectly what you're talking about, because it happened to me today also.
Wow. Thank you, Joyce. Oh, my goodness. What a good example, but what a beautiful demonstration of even in the middle of like an ego tantrum, you're still talking to spirit. You're still talking to Jesus, and you're asking still for guidance, and then something completely different comes out of your mouth. That's just such a beautiful demonstration of allowing yourself to be guided. So bravo. And thank you for your honesty too. You know, I have noticed before, and this again is in my own little world and the little things in the world that I might hear about, you know, beyond my little bubble, but sometimes it seems like there's a collective hissy fit, you know, there's a collective ego tantrum. Cause I know of someone, a friend's cousin who just passed in a way that was very shocking. And I know others have been going through a difficult time within the past, you know, couple of days, and maybe not everybody, but it's just always interesting when you hear things happening, you know, all within the same kind of time frame, and it just makes you wonder if we're not all feeling that sort of little ego hissy fit. But we as miracle workers, our job is to flush it out. We're here to let it come up and to bring it to the light to heal it for all. So that's a beautiful thing. Thank you for that, Joyce. Yeah.
This is Jen. I have a question. This is something that I've been thinking about, and you just kind of brought it up, and it kind of goes with what we're kind of discovering tonight. You know, when you're talking about, you know, the Course says that all minds are joined.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm wondering, and it makes sense to me, I kind of sense this. I'm trying to explain what I'm – bear with me as I struggle for the words.
Sure.
If I am struggling, let's say I'm triggered with something. I feel someone was rude and I'm angry. I do get triggered that way, and I do have a hothead. My daughter calls – I have a whole little hot temper sometimes. So if I'm triggered and I'm getting angry about something that I think someone did – if we're talking about level of energy and all minds are joined, just following that thought process, I'm wondering if that doesn't put me in that, like a radio wave, a thought wave pattern of everyone else that's ticked off.
Mm-hmm.
Or, I mean, you know, whatever that might be, or if someone's, my dog's playing in the room. Or
I love how the animals join us on these calls. It's great.
You know, they really do. He was just sound asleep until this call.
Of course.
But if, you know, or if someone is depressed, if they're picking up everyone else's patterns of thoughts that are depressed, I'm just wondering. I don't know
if
you have any.
Yeah, that's a great question. Yes, minds are joined, and yes, you know, we have our individual dreams, but we're all sort of dreaming this together because there is one mind, minds are joined. And so, yeah, I mean, the Course says, as you heal, a bird somewhere with broken wings begins to sing. You touch other minds that you're not even aware of. So, I mean, I don't want to give any energy into the opposite in saying, like, you know, when I'm fearful or angry or whatever, that you're strengthening anything. You're certainly only upholding a false belief in the mind, and maybe on some level, you know, those others who are in that same sort of wavelength. But I do think, you know, I did a video blog once a long time ago on you know, talking about empaths and being a very sensitive person where you pick up on the energy of others, that was always an interesting thought to me, because what is negative energy for anybody? But it's just a fear thought. Like, there's only love or fear. It's just a fear thought. So it's, I don't even know if it's like picking up on a negative energy, because I don't,
I think we're on the same page with this, but I'm going to take it to the next page.
Okay.
Because I think this is where our power is as miracle workers, mm-hmm. is when we're on these thoughts and we're feeling the energy as it comes up, and we're not judging ourselves, but we're being very authentic and truthful with our feelings,
mm-hmm.
and we're calling on Holy Spirit. So that starts healing that
mm-hmm.
energy, just like what you described today. But
mm-hmm.
that would also start healing everyone else that is in that thought process.
Yeah. Absolutely. And the sonship as a whole, like all fear, not just necessarily of the same types of fears, but all fear.
Yeah.
And you know what? I'll share one more quick example that just came to mind that I have not thought about in a while. On my last plane trip, when I went down to North Carolina, I think on my way home, I don't remember which direction it was. Maybe it was the way there. I am now very comfortable with flying. I used to be very uncomfortable flying. And as I'm sitting there on the plane, I got a jolt of fear, like out of nowhere. Like, you know, this thought, like, oh my gosh, what if something happens? And I was like, whoa. And then it happened again. And I was like, I'm handing this right over. Like, where is this coming from? And I quickly realized that the woman sitting next to me was terrified out of her mind to fly. And her daughter was sitting on the aisle trying to keep her calm. And when I realized that, I thought, well, wow, I mean, I wonder if I'm picking up, you know, on her, because her fear was so intense, because I really felt comfortable like being there on the plane. So I was like, where did this thought come from? So that's where my work then came in, was to just notice what was coming up in me, whether or not I'm picking up on somebody else's energy or whatever, however you want to describe it. But my job is still the same. It's still to notice it, take it to the Holy Spirit, notice it, take it to the Holy Spirit. And I kept affirming the truth in that flight. And I hope she had an okay, bearable experience. She didn't go over, you know, overboard into a panic attack or anything, from what I could tell. But I do believe that we help one another in that way, for sure. So thank you, Dana. That's a great question. Great little topic to talk about. How about we read another paragraph? Yeah, let's read another paragraph. Okay. The real world still is but a dream, except the figures have been changed. They are not seen as idols which betray. It is a dream in which no one is used to substitute for something else or interpose between the thoughts the mind conceives and what it sees. No one is used for something he is not, for childish things have all been put away. And what was once a dream of judgment now has changed into a dream where all is joy, because that is the purpose that it has. Only forgiving dreams can enter here, for time is almost over. And the forms which enter in the dreams are now perceived as brothers, not in judgment, but in love. This is a beautiful paragraph, because the Course talks about the real world and how we can begin to perceive the real world here. This is not the real world, this world of form, and the real world we don't see with our body's eyes. It's a different type of vision. And as this paragraph describes, the real world is still a dream, but it's a dream of forgiveness. It's a dream in which there are no idols. There's no attack. It's where we perceive one another as brothers, not in judgment, but in love. And this real world is what we begin to wake up to here. So the faulty belief that death is going to bring about, you know, awareness of the real world. No, our job now is to start to wake up to the real world here. And as we enter a gentler phase of dreaming, that real world, I do think of Ibn Alexander's near-death experience. We've talked about that before, where he described still seeing lots of people and animals, but there was such joy amongst everyone, and everyone was in plain clothing, but like so happy, and I don't remember more detail except that it was just beautiful and very happy, peaceful, and loving. So this is what we start to wake up to now through forgiveness as we start to recognize the truth behind the form here, right now. That is our work. Next paragraph. Forgiving dreams have little need to last. They are not made to separate the mind from what it thinks. They are not made to separate the mind from what it thinks. Wow. They do not seek to prove the dream is being dreamed by someone else. And in these dreams, a melody is heard, which everyone remembers, though he has not heard it since before all time began. Forgiveness, once complete, brings timelessness so close, the song of heaven can be heard, not with the ears, but with the holiness that never left the altar, which abides forever deep within the Son of God. And when he hears the song again, he knows he never heard it not. And where is time when dreams of judgment have been put away? We'll pause there. I thought this second sentence was fascinating. So forgiving dreams have little need to last. They are not made to separate. So this is kind of going back to what Sue brought up in the very beginning of our call, that, well, in our discussion about the thoughts that we think are not our real thoughts. So we're having a dream where we're trying to separate our real thoughts from the mind that thinks them to keep a gap in place there. So I just thought that was a fascinating sentence, that forgiving dreams are not made to separate the mind from what it thinks. We want to have our whole mind together thinking the thoughts that it thinks, which are thoughts of love and joy and peace. And isn't this bit about the melody just absolutely beautiful? I love it. Any comments or questions?
I just have one thing to add.
Sure.
Something that I've been doing lately. We always talk about giving things to the Holy Spirit,
mm-hmm.
and letting, you know, the Holy Spirit have. And I have a little bit of a problem between, you know, the Holy Spirit is that your higher self, you know, the difference between higher self and Holy Spirit. I don't really, you know, but that's neither here nor there. But what I have been doing is when I do give that, I remember one of the books I was reading, a little pamphlet, that you must remember how much you are loved.
Mm.
That is this, if you can only remember it for a half a second or a minute and just build on that, because that is the basis for your existence, that you are loved. So if you can just go into that state and accept that and receive it, it just propels your spiritual life.
Mm. Yes. Oh, that's beautiful. That reminds me of the quote, if you knew who walked beside you on the way that you've chosen, fear would be impossible.
Uh-huh.
If we knew just a little bit, fear would be impossible.
It would be. But when I can feel that, when I accept that, I just it's different than just saying. For me, it's different than the words. It's just sinking into that. Wow.
Mm-hmm.
You know, wow. To think that the creator of the whole thing is nothing but love, and I am singled out as everyone else was singled out.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
mm-hmm.
It's amazing.
And you're also just highlighting how important it is as we feel ready or willing to really try to sink into the meaning of the words that we read. I know we're reading a lot, you know, in a paragraph at a time when we do this together, but when we're reading on our own, it can be so helpful to really take your time and to really, really let the meaning behind the words sink in. Just like you're saying, those are pretty words about remembering how much you're loved, but it's a totally different experience if you sink into the meaning of what that is saying. And
right.
And that's where the experience comes in. And that experience
and they're
is
being
what we
said
need.
To you. They're being said
yeah.
to you.
To you, yes.
Yes.
Yes. Thank you for that. That's awesome. Thank you for adding. Oh, all right. Shall we go for the next two paragraphs? Let's do it. Oh, this is a good first sentence. Whenever you feel fear in any form, and you are fearful if you do not feel a deep content, a certainty of help, a calm assurance, heaven goes with you. Be sure you made an idol and believe it will betray you. For beneath your hope that it will save you lies the guilt and pain of self-betrayal and uncertainty, so deep and bitter that the dream cannot conceal completely all your sense of doom. Your self-betrayal must result in fear, and fear is judgment, leading surely to the frantic search for idols and for death. Yuck. That's my commentary for that paragraph. This first sentence, I mean, ask ourselves honestly, do you feel a deep content, a certainty of help, a calm assurance, heaven goes with you? Probably most of the time, maybe I feel a little content and fairly confident in getting help and maybe feeling like heaven's with me some of the time. You know, we don't stay there. And so if we're not staying there, we're feeling fear in some form, and we can be sure we've made an idol and we believe it will betray us. So again, there is the place where the rubber hits the road, because if we can recognize I'm feeling lack of peace, and again, Holy Spirit, show me the idols that I've made. I'm willing to look, or whatever words it is that we want to say. And so this paragraph then goes on. For beneath your hope that the idol will save you lies the guilt and pain of self-betrayal and uncertainty, so deep and bitter that the dream cannot conceal completely all your sense of doom. So in other words, we made an idol we made an idol as a substitute for God, and we still hope that we can be saved by all the things in the world. We still look out there for our completion, for our safety, and yet that's still not fully covering the sense of doom that we feel deep down, because we have tried to replace God with something else, with an idol. And our self-betrayal, this is what I wanted to highlight. I was like, I knew I wanted to say something else. What was it? Think of self-betrayal as betraying your capital S self. Can't really happen, but we can keep our capital S self out of our awareness. And when we keep our capital S self out of awareness and we identify with just a small, tiny, frail, fragile self instead, of course that's going to result in fear. So that's going to lead us to want to frantically try to find safety, but we tend to look for more idols to do that. Our safety is only found in God. We have not betrayed our capital S self. We have to remember that all of what we talk about that we're doing is done already. We haven't done, nothing's happened. We haven't changed the laws of God. The real world has gone on undisturbed despite what we think, despite anything that we think. So heaven is just heaven and is there for us the moment that we're ready to wake up to it while we are here. Let's read the final paragraph. Forgiving dreams remind you that you live in safety and have not attacked yourself. That was the sentence I was thinking of earlier. We have not actually attacked ourselves. We might think we have. We might think we betrayed our capital S self. We have not. So I'm going to read this again. Forgiving dreams remind you that you live in safety and have not attacked yourself. So do your childish terrors melt away. And dreams become a sign that you have made a new beginning, not another try to worship idols and to keep attack. Forgiving dreams are kind to everyone, so they bring the dreamer full relief from dreams of fear. He does not fear his judgment, for he has judged no one, nor has sought to be released through judgment from what judgment must impose. And all the while, he is remembering what he forgot when judgment seemed to be the way to save him from its penalty. There's a footnote right there. It says, this means when judgment, carried out by his idols, seemed to be the way to save him from its penalty. Wait, that sounded confusing. This footnote is reworking the sentence. I don't know if I can read this without it sounding confusing. When judgment carried out by his idols seemed to be the way to save him from its penalty, that means carried out by the dangers in the dream. So in other words, when we have our, I don't know if I can explain that. Anybody want to help me out with that last sentence and that footnote for those of you who have the CE?
Corinne,
yes.
I have something that keeps coming to me. A lot of times I learn in visuals. Mm-hmm. And so years ago, I was living in a little cottage in a very low-income environment that it had been used as, I guess, a drug house before I rented it out. And so there was some nefarious people that would come at times that I'd have to call the police on. Anyway, long story short, but I say that because it's important. I woke up in the middle of the night and I looked out my window, and I lived alone. It was just me and my dogs. And I looked out the window in the middle of the night, and it was kind of foggy and very low light. And it was just a form. I could just see a form. And it was in the shape of what appeared to be a man. Mm-hmm. And I sat up most of the night terrified. Mm-hmm. I didn't want to call the cops because it wasn't moving and I felt stupid calling them. Mm-hmm. But I'm like, I can't go back to sleep. But as the light got increased in the morning and it got lighter and lighter out, the form actually was a bush.
Mm-hmm.
And this what reminds me of this, and I do this in my life, and I feel that the Holy Spirit is looking, telling me, you're making yourself terrified over a bush.
Mm. Oh,
and
Jana.
As the light increases in my life, mm-hmm. I start seeing all of these dreams that terrify me, that they're really innocent things. That I don't need to be afraid of.
That's beautiful. And what a powerful, powerful example. Thank you so much for that. And I can now relate it to this footnote because the words came to me as you were speaking. Judgment's penalty. So the penalty, I think I can say it. Judgment's penalty are the dangers in the dream. So when we thought that judgment could save us from its own penalty, we now I don't have words. I get it in my head, and I'm having trouble putting it into words, so I'm sorry. If anybody is with
me. Can I try?
Please,
I'll give it a
please,
try.
Please.
I think what I mean is, you know, the judgment, we're looking to judgment to save us, but in reality, that's what's hurting us. So
yeah,
we're looking for the penalty to be our salvation.
And
does
those
make
are the
sense?
Dangers. Yes. Those are the dangers in the dream. Yes, thank you. I was trying to tie that penalty piece. That was perfect. That was just nice and succinct. Thank you.
And it kind of reminds me, that our when we judge, whether it be ourselves or someone else, it's like dimming the light. And so things can't be seen correctly. And then they become scary.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, as we let go of our judgment, the light increases and we realize there's nothing to be afraid of.
Yes.
The penalty might be guilt, because that's what comes when you judge something. You're always still,
for sure.
You feel bad later.
And we project that guilt outward. So
yeah,
it seems then that what we've projected our guilt out onto, those toys, are then coming after us. They're coming to get us. So Jana's example with the bush is just so fantastic, because we can use that as an example in our own lives. Where do, you know, what is seeming to be scary to us, when in fact, if we saw it under the light, we'd see that it was just our fear reflecting back to us, and that's all.
And, you know, another thing, everybody, we are so used to judging, we are not even aware that we are judging each other.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's like so natural for us to do it. And if someone pointed out, say, Joyce, you're judging, I'll say, oh, no, I'm not judging. I'm just trying to help.
Right?
Yeah. And they're listening to me.
Right.
Just, yeah.
Yeah, it's so true. That is so true. The ego, it exists in judgment. It can't exist without judgment. Just like it said at the very beginning of the section when we started in paragraph number 2, how can we awaken from the dream? It's a dream of judgment. So this is literally a dream of judgment. The judgment is built into the fabric of the dream. So we must simply judge not, and we will awaken. And again, we can't just not judge, because that's what, I mean, again, if you think about it from a brain level, the brain is wired to constantly be making judgments. We need the Holy Spirit outside of the fearful thought system to teach us, to show us the way, and to guide us. So we can't cease judging on our own.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, and doing the workbook again, I also started it again on the first. It's making me see, you know, things that I didn't even think were judgments are judgments. And like you're mm-hmm. saying, like the brain's just programmed, it does that. And it's been a really big aha this last couple weeks. I've been like, wow, there's so many
yeah.
things that I'm judging. But I'm noticing too that the more I'm doing the workbook and working on that, has brought so much more peace.
Yeah.
It's just amazing.
Paul, I relate to you completely, and I'd love to just share my little OMG moment with the workbook, because like you, you know, I've done it before and doing it again and just, again, getting things on a whole different level. Lesson 23 from a few days ago is, I can escape from the world I see by giving up attack thoughts. So what are attack thoughts but judgment? With what we just read, how do we wake up? We stop judging. How do we escape from the world we see? We give up attack thoughts. And it says in this very first sentence of this lesson, it says, the idea for today contains the only way out of fear that will ever succeed. Nothing else will work. Everything else is meaningless, but this way cannot fail. And I always think of Earl Purdy when he says, when the Course says only, or every, or always, or never, when the Course says those words, it means it. So this is saying, escaping the world, we can only wake up from the dream by giving up attack thoughts, by giving up judgment. This is the only way out of fear that will ever succeed. Nothing else will work. Everything else is meaningless. So that was like a showstopper. I took a photo of that and texted it to my husband. I was like, look at this.
Karen?
Yeah.
Hi. Yes, I have a question.
Sure.
This is Marianne. So it seems to me that judgment thoughts result from something else that happened first, which is self-betrayal. So we betrayed the self, apparently, first. And that word self-betrayal jumps out very strongly. It seems, do you have any thoughts on that self-betrayal bit? The fact that we all seem to have chosen self-betrayal for some reason.
Well, what comes forward for me, and you're absolutely right, you know, where is the judgment coming from? Did something happen before the judgment? And this idea of self-betrayal, I agree with you that kind of jumps out. The way that I interpret that is, again, think of it as our capital S self. So our true self, our higher self, we didn't really, but we think we betrayed that self by, like, rejecting it, by saying, nope, that's not me. I'm going to go play my own little game of separation. I'm going to play my own little game of judgment. I'm going to steal a little part of the mind of God and, you know, twist it off from the rest and pretend that I'm my own little father to my own little universe, just like that sentence said that we read about the dream of judgment being a children's game in which the child becomes the father. So we didn't really betray ourselves because we're still at home, but we are seemingly dreaming this dream of separation in which we think we betrayed ourselves and we think that God is mad at us for it. And so that guilt and that fear comes in at a very deep level that literally our minds of love can't tolerate, because our minds is only love. You know, how can a mind be only love and have guilt and fear? It can't. So we, in my book, I use the idea of like mental vomiting. Like we literally hurl that fear and guilt outwards, and then it seems as if everything out there is out to get us because we first, you know, projected that fear and guilt because we think we betrayed a self that we actually, that's impossible. So does that help at all?
Yes.
Okay, good. Thank you for bringing that up, Marianne. That was
yes.
a very
Thank
good
you.
Thing to highlight. Awesome. All right. We're at the top of the hour, and we finished chapter 29. Wow. We are starting chapter 30 next week, so that'll be easy to find your page number, but feel free to put a bookmark in there anyway. And I love you all, and we will gather again next weekend. So have a great night, everybody.
Have a great
Thanks,
night. My computer.
Thank you.
My computer is not working, so I'll be sending it whenever I get it.
Okay.
Good night.
Love you, everyone.
Good night.
Bye.
Good night.
Bye. 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 Bye.